Okay. Day 27. Day 26 was the test. Okay.
I remember you have some homework due tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Left off last time, we talked about directional derivatives and gradients for two-dimensional inputs. We're going to think about also three-dimensional inputs today. Now let me remind you about a few things here. So there's this thing, this symbol. It's just a symbol, and what it means is you take the partial derivatives for each input variable, and that becomes a corresponding coordinate of a vector. Right? This would be the 2D version, and here would be the 3D version, where you had three inputs. Okay. Remember that little subscript there. That's just a shorter way of writing the partial derivative, right? And so this is the 3D version, right? Of course, the meaning of the partial derivative is essentially the same. It's just a question of how many other variables you have to hold constant, right? So in 2D, there's only one variable to hold constant. In 3D, there's two other variables. So you have to hold both of them constant.
All right.
And this is connected with what's called the directional derivative, okay, and so I can write it as just one formula, okay. Once I have this gradient notation, right? The derivative with respect to some vector is the limit, if it exists, of, think of it as the derivative along the line that goes through your base point and is parallel to u here. Okay. So it looks like the usual definition of a derivative. So I guess let's write it. We want to talk about this directional derivative at a particular point. Okay. So at some base point, we do this. So you're measuring the rate of change as you go along a line. Right? So you think of it as here's your origin, could be 2D or 3D. Here's your base point, and then you look at scalar multiples, positive or negative, of your vector u, which is parallel to this line. So maybe if delta t is positive, you could have something like this. And so that gives you, see, this arrow is a position arrow. You think of the U delta T as a displacement arrow. And so it gives you another position. So on this line in 2D or 3D space, you're looking at two different points, and you feed those points into F, right? Because F takes a 2D or 3D input. And then you're computing essentially a slope, right? You're taking the change in the output divided by the change in the input. It's kind of cheating in the sense that you have, you know, if this U vector is really big, it'll make the slope be artificially big. So usually we're most interested in this stuff. When we're not cheating, when this thing just has magnitude 1. So if you like, when we move along this line at speed 1, what is the rate of change of the function outputs? I mean, the definition makes sense for any vector, but you're most interested in it for when u is an actual direction, meaning we've divided out the speed or magnitude. So you can think of u as a velocity vector if you want. Now, in practice, no one's ever figuring this out. No one's ever looking at this limit directly unless they're trying to do an abstract proof. Okay. Generally speaking, unless you have some really nasty function, you can just use a nice theorem that someone has already proven long ago, that if the function is differentiable at your base point, this limit is easy to find. Okay. Remember, that was more than just having the partial derivatives. It had to have an actual tangent plane. And for 3D inputs, it would have to have a tangent hyperplane, which I won't try to draw. If it's differentiable at your base point, then this limit is easy. Okay? All you have to do is figure out the gradient, the partial derivatives. It's just a dot product. And so this is true in 2D or 3D. If you remember, the definition of differentiable involves these little epsilons that had to go to zero. For the 3D definition, there are 3 epsilons that would have to go to zero. But I'm not going to get into all that. Just like in 2D inputs with 3D inputs, all polynomials are differentiable and everything's fine. Okay. So this stuff is really all the same for 2D and 3D. The patterns are all the same. There'll be some stuff that's a little different in terms of the geometry, but first, let's do an example of this relatively kind stuff here. So, let's see, choose four. Hopefully an example or two will clarify all these definitions. Yeah? Okay. Okay. 2D input. We did this before. It's not quite a polynomial, but we talked about the chain rule. If you put together different differentiable functions, right, you get another differentiable function. So the square root function is a differentiable function of one input, right? And inside it, we've got a polynomial x plus 2y that takes 2 inputs. We chain them together, it's still differentiable.
So this thing is actually differentiable everywhere that where the square root is positive. It could have a vertical tangent plane where the square root is zero and hence not be differentiable. But as long as we plug in a point where the square root is positive, this is fine. And this is the calculus 3 chain rule now. Although some of you on your tests, you know, you were having trouble with the calculus 1 chain rule.
Watch out for that.
Okay. All right. So let's get some formulas here. Okay. So this is the gradient, right? Use this subscript notation. It's a little bit less writing. Of course, this is the shortest of all. Anyways, so what is the x partial derivative? Right? Let's do the easy part first. What's the x partial of x cubed y? Three x squared times a constant multiple. Yeah, that's right. 3x squared y, right? Because we're treating y as a constant when we take the x partial. Now, what about this? Use the chain rule, okay? So we need to remember, maybe you remember this. Maybe you've seen this one. If you don't remember that one, you can do the power rule one, right? It works out the same. Same thing.
Yeah.
So over here, we're going to have minus 1 over 2 times the square root of x plus 2y times what? Just 1. We're just taking the x partial of this. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Y partial derivative. What's the y partial of the first term? We're holding x constant now, so the x cubed is a constant multiple of y, and the derivative of y with respect to y will just be 1, so it's x cubed times 1 minus. Now we use the chain rule. So it's 1 over twice the square root of x plus 2y times 2. Because the derivative of the inner function, x plus 2y, with respect to y, holding x constant, is 2, right? You hold x constant, derivative 0, then constant multiple 2 times the derivative of y with respect to itself, which is 1. Okay, so. Obviously, I said more than I wrote. There's something you want to ask me about, some step I didn't show or whatever, now's your chance to ask.
The 2?
Yeah.
How do you have to multiply by 2?
Okay.
With respect to y? 2y again?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just the derivative, right?
Yep, it's a partial derivative. So this is the gradient, and so now let's say we want to know let me start with one vector v, which will be let's say we're interested in the direction kind of going up and to the right, 45 degrees, okay? So V is I plus J is another way of writing it. Not my best I plus J, like that. Yeah. And okay, that has magnitude 2. So I'm not
I'm not super interested in the directional derivative with respect to that one. But it would be more natural to think about the rate of change along this, along the line, along the line of this slope of inputs. I'm interested to think about that if we were moving along at speed 1. Then that would seem a fair comparison to other directional derivatives. So what we do is we just make the vector have the right magnitude. So we had some vector, just divide out the magnitude. Now this is a perfectly sensible thing to ask. What is the derivative in this direction? And we've got differentiability, so we can go ahead and take a dot product. So let's pick a base point. How about I'll make the square root come out nice. So how about 5 and 2? Because then it'll be 5 plus 2 times 2, so the square root will be 3. Okay, so there's a whole bunch of things here, and most of them I just made them up, right? I made up the F, I made up the V, I made up the base point. Those are all just givens, right? Yeah, the other stuff I had to do some actual work besides just making something up. Okay, let's see. Let me switch these. I'm a little too tall for writing down there. This one keeps going. So let's find the gradient at the base point. And what do we got? Plug in the numbers, a 5 and a 2, right? So 150 for that term minus 6. And 125 minus 3rd. I did my arithmetic right there. Right. See, this is just your x position, this is your y position. So you just plug in 5 and 2. Point, we just have to take the dot product, right? Okay, so this is, what is this arithmetic here? And, there. Which is 746. Okay. Can Isaac, can you shut the?
Yeah.
You. Okay, so if I did my arithmetic right, then we're just going to take this times this, right? So 899 over 6 root 2 plus 748 over 6 root 2. Right? This times this plus that times that. So this represents the rate of change as you go along the line through 5.2 here. Right? So in this example, this is 5.2, and then our line points. In a certain direction. Right? So here we are at 5.2. And there's my vector u. And so we're measuring the rate of change of our function as we move along this line of inputs at speed 1. So you could think of it as maybe you have two-dimensional position, like you're driving your car, right? And your position is the input, and the output is, say, the temperature. Okay? You have a thermometer. You know, my van has a thermometer. It tells me what it thinks the temperature is outside. Right? So as you're driving along at speed 1, in whatever the units are, through this point right here, what is the rate of change of the temperature? Right. You know, depending on which way you're going, right? If you're going this way, the temperature could be increasing. This derivative came out positive, so that would be the interpretation that it's increasing at this rate as we go through here with speed 1. If we're going some other direction, it could be decreasing, right? Certainly, if we went in the opposite direction, it would be decreasing.
So that's how you can interpret it physically. Now, of course, as you move through three-dimensional space, the temperature can change. So it's totally sensible to ask, okay, as I go a certain direction in 3D space at speed 1, what is the rate of change of the temperature? Yeah. Right.
There you have a 3D input and then an output that's a number. And so you can ask the same kinds of questions. Instantaneous rate of change right there at the base point, moving at speed 1. And u is the direction we're moving.
See, if I'd used the original v instead of this u, then it would have given me a faster rate of change, but only because I would be moving through that point at a faster speed. Right. So let's bring the backboard down. Okay, 3D example, right? So, okay, here's a... Okay. I'll spare us some time and just do an easy one where it's just a polynomial, okay? Others are similar. This one you'll have x cubed times 2y times z, because the x and z are constant multiples, and we do the y partial derivative, and then 0 plus 1 plus 0.
Let's make it a little more interesting. It's obvious what the difference, I wanted to clear these numbers came from different places. Alright. And then the last one, the derivative of z will just be 1, the x and y will be a constant multiple, because we're holding every variable except z constant now. And again, save time, let's make the numbers easy. Okay, so our position vector is 1, 1, 1. And the gradient, or not, is what? Well, okay, just plug in a bunch of 1s, okay? 3 plus 1, 2 plus 4, 1 plus 6, 4, 6, 7. And I could have some vector that I'm interested in, like 1, 2, negative 3, for example. Okay. And I could make this into a direction by just dividing out the magnitude. Sometimes I use the little pointy hat to indicate that manipulation, right? And so if we took the directional derivative with respect to this direction, so we're measuring the rate of change of our function's g's outputs as we pass through this input point 1, 1, 1, and we're moving at this velocity, so speed 1 in this direction. So the dot product would be 4, 6, 7, dot 1, 2, negative 3, so 4, 12, minus 21, which is negative 5. So it's really quite similar to the 2D example. There's just one more coordinate you have to deal with. But the patterns are the same. Questions or comments? Because I was interested in the rate of change for a direction, right? You can find a. Actually, I did it wrong, didn't I? Okay. So what I actually did, I just left off the whole hat part, didn't I?
Yeah.
Why would I do it if I'm not going to use it? Okay, so if we're moving at speed root 13, then our rate of change is negative 5. If we're moving in this direction at speed root 13, so that's this, think of that as this velocity vector, then our rate of change is negative 5. But if we're moving at speed 1, so we're moving root 13 slower, right, because this is the root 13, then it's just going to, you can factor that out of the dot product, so we'll just do this. There we go. So yeah. If you go faster, things change faster.
It's root 14. It should be root 14.
Okay. You're absolutely right. Not it. Okay. All right. All right. Let's see what I got here. Looks. Okay. Okay. Root 14. And okay, now I'll try and erase the front part. I don't think there's any horrible mistakes on the front part. Okay. Now, see, here's where things start to. Okay, so far, I haven't really made significant difference between 2D and 3D. I may need to save the significant stuff for next time. Let me just remind you that just like in 2D, in 3D, the gradient points in the direction of fastest increase. Okay? So if you're going at speed 1, the way to make this function increase the fastest is to follow the gradient's direction. The way to make it decrease the fastest is to go the opposite way. Okay? So, of course, remember with direction, in general, the gradient doesn't have magnitude 1. So if you want an actual direction, right, so that we have a level playing field here between the different velocity vectors we're thinking about, we have to divide out by the magnitude. I mean, you could always make stuff change faster by increasing your speed, but that's too easy. Right? We want to ask, given, you know, no control over speed, so to keep it simple, speed 1, which way makes things increase the fastest? Likewise, if we constrain ourselves to move at speed 1, and whether we're talking about 2D motion or 3D motion, if we go the opposite way of the gradient, just put a minus sign in front, and that's the fastest decrease. Okay?
So this idea, of course, has actual applications. It's not just a nice fact. What if you were trying to minimize something, like you're trying to minimize a cost function, right? Or maximize profit, or maximize energy efficiency, or something you're trying to minimize or maximize, and you have some 2D or 3D or, I don't know, even higher dimensional inputs that you could control, and you wanna find inputs that get you at least close to this minimum or maximum you seek. Well, if you're seeking a minimum, the idea is, you know, just make a guess at something good, and then look at where the gradient points, and then move in the direction of the gradient a little bit, right? And then if you're trying to increase, you would move in the direction of the gradient. If you're trying to decrease, you would move the opposite way. So let me show you a... Okay. So say we're trying to minimize, right? So this method is called gradient descent, right? It has tons of applications, right? Because it's a kind of algorithm where you just do something over and over and over again, and so a computer is great for doing it. So if you can tell the computer how to compute the gradient, the computer can just use this method to find minimums, right? Let's say, make it 3D, okay? Actually is something here, so I gotta be careful that there actually is a minimum to find. All right. Okay. So this will be let's call this function H. It's the next letter I haven't used yet. F G H. Okay. So I just need to start with a guess. I'm going to call this sort of my zeroth point. Okay. And I'm just going to make a very naive guess. You know, I have no idea. How about the origin?
Let's start there. Okay.
I know because of this yz minus 1 business, I'm going to get 1 there. So it's probably not optimal. Right?
Okay.
But we'll see which way the gradient points. The gradient will point in the direction of steepest increase. Okay? And I'm going to just follow the gradient, I'm going to go away from the gradient because I want to decrease. Okay? So let's find the gradient. Okay, so x partial will be 4x cubed. Plus 2xy squared plus nothing. And then the y partial will be nothing plus x squared times 2y. Plus, now here I have to use the chain rule. So the derivative of x squared is 2x. But not x, yz minus 1 is the thing we're squaring. And then I have to take the y partial of this, which is z. And then I need to do the z component, which will be nothing plus the z partial of this thing. Okay, so that will be just 2 times yz minus 1 again by the chain rule, right? But now the difference is we're going to take the z partial. Okay, so we got a general formula. Now what we do is we pick a step size. How about we'll just call it S, and let's just say we're going to go 0.1. All right, that's probably a little bit. That might be a little bit too big, but anyway, we just want to get a rough estimate. I don't want this to take forever. And we're going to follow the gradient. I'm just going to take the gradient times this number. So basically I'm going to go a little bit, we're trying to decrease. So go a little bit against the gradient to decrease the function. Okay. So our new point, our second guess, our improved guess will be the original guess plus the gradient evaluated at our first guess, times this 0.1 here, right? I don't want to make a huge jump because that could make things even worse. Because if I go way far away, I could go way beyond the place where the function is decreasing in my direction. Minus. I want to decrease. I could go way too far, right? I could be driving down towards the valley, but if I go too far, I'm back up in the mountains again. Okay, so just follow this a little bit and then recompute the gradient. So plug in some stuff here, right? So it's 0, 0, 0 minus, now plug in a bunch of zeros and what do you get? 0, here it's not all 0, right? 2 times 0 minus 1, so that's a negative 2. And here it's still 0, okay? Times 0.1. Okay, so what does this say? It says that you want it, so we're going to go from the origin now to what's hopefully a better place where the function value is lower. What do we get? I think we just get 0, positive 0.2, 0. Okay. So what's the actual output value at the origin, right? Well, if you plug in all zeros here, you just get negative 1 squared, which is 1. Let's see if this is any better. Okay, so plug in 0 for x and z again, but now plug in 0.2 for y. Sir, yeah?
Why is the y term negative 2? Shouldn't it also be 0? Because you're multiplying it by z.
You're right. Well, that stinks.
Well, that's no good. That means the gradient's zero, and I have no idea where to go. All right. Okay. Fine. Okay. There's two things I can do in this situation. Either I can really cheat and just change the function, or or I can try something different. Okay. But only a little bit. All right. I mean, if we were really trying to minimize this, this wouldn't be cheating. This would just be the best we can do. What this means is the origin could be the best, and maybe I just don't realize it. If the origin is really the minimum, then I'll follow the gradient from this other point right back to the origin. But if it's not, I mean, maybe it's a local maximum, right? If it's not, then this will take me someplace better. Okay. So if I plug in a 0.5, then now this is, let's be clear what I was doing here. So it was going to be 0, which would be sad, but now we've made it something we can use, right? Okay. Now it's going to be 0.1.5. Okay. And let's see. And the new one will be 0.1. Okay, so if we started at here, what would happen? 0, 0, still. This will still be the same thing. It actually, the value doesn't change, okay? Because everywhere there's a z, it's still getting multiplied by that y of 0. So at this starting point, we're still getting 1. Now let's see what we get here now, okay? Let's see if it gets less than 1. So we're going to have 0 to the 4th plus 0 squared times 0.1 squared, okay, so that's nothing. What about here? Here we have 0.1 times 0.5 minus 1 squared. This is going to be 0.05, so negative 0.95 squared. This is going to be smaller than 1. So it actually did get a little better. Okay. Let's see. Am I going to do the square in my head? Anyways. Whatever it is, I'm not going to do the square in my head. The point is it's less than 1, okay? Okay. So, this is better. Okay. Now, we could repeat the process, right? We could. So that's what we do next, right? Okay. Next, we would find the gradient, right, at the new point, right? Then we would go against the gradient because we're trying to minimize. Okay. So let me just abbreviate it here. I'm going to use the little r vector notation, right? So the next point would be, again, the same thing. We take our earlier guess minus the gradient evaluated at our earlier guess, okay, times our step size, okay? So every time we just go
we just go against the gradient, and the point of this S here is to try and help us avoid going too far. Depending on how big the gradient is, you might need to pick a different S, right? And there's other various tricks that people use besides just a constant for trying to decide, you know, how far do I follow the gradient before I recompute the gradient and see which direction it's telling me to go next. Okay? What happens after this? Okay, and right. Then what do you do next, right? Then you find delta H R at the third point we've looked at now, right? After we've improved our guess twice, we're at this position R2. We find where the gradient is pointing, and we go the opposite way. And then we can keep repeating this and try to get closer to the actual minimum. Now, eventually, when you're really close to the minimum, you'll find that if you follow the gradient, you'll just be kind of bouncing around. And so that means you'll need to decrease your step size. But don't worry about that. Just go with a step size of 0.1. Okay, so this is your homework. This is not due tomorrow. It's the older homework that's due tomorrow, right? Okay. So you just continue what I started here, okay? So you go to about get to R10. And find the actual function values, right? And see if you're actually doing better each time, right? Are we actually decreasing the value of the function? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I hope that homework is a little more interesting than usual. A little more purposeful. Because you can apply this to some function you actually care about in the real world. And people use computers to do this all the time. We have more sophisticated methods than this. Okay. Any other questions about this stuff? All right. Again, this one's not due for a while. You have plenty of time to ask me for more information if you get stuck somewhere. And now we can hand back the tests.